The Source Podcast is brought to you by TechPont, a San Antonio company that uses cutting-edge digital technology to elevate marketing and advertising campaigns while reporting on transparent, measurable results. Their custom-built marketing strategies offer complete digital solutions and management. TechPont strives to help businesses connect with customers and effectively grow businesses. More at TechPonte.com.
This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Development and rapid population growth are putting lower-income, inner-core San Antonio neighborhoods increasingly at risk for predatory gentrification. Signs around the west side of San Antonio declare, "Mi barrio no se vende," my neighborhood isn't for sale. But with rising property taxes and perpetual buy-as-is offers, many houses in the near downtown neighborhoods are being sold, remodeled, and flipped for a lot more money. What should homeowners know, and what should they prepare for with this latest wave of gentrification? What resources are available? How are community groups working together to protect and preserve neighborhoods and prevent displacement of San Antonio residents? Lots of ways for you to join our conversation, and we sure want to hear your stories. The number is 210-614-8980. What are you seeing from your front porch? 210-614-8980. You could also email your questions and comments to The Source at tpr.org and tweet at us at tprsource. We're joined this hour with Shirley Gonzalez, District 5 representative on the San Antonio City Council. Councilmember Gonzalez, congratulations again on being reelected back to your office, and welcome back to The Source.
Thank you very much.
And Christy Villanueva, president of West San Antonio Chamber of Commerce, is with us. Christy, welcome to The Source.
Thank you.
And Daniel Ibarra is the coordinator of the Mexican American Unity Council Housing Center. Welcome to The Source.
Thank you for having me.
So, Councilmember Gonzalez, can you talk about, you know, this is right where you live on the west side of San Antonio. You have a front row seat. You've seen this over the years. What are you seeing? What are your concerns? What roles can the city council play in trying to tap back the negative impact of predatory gentrification?
We know that one of the greatest problems that we have in our community is substandard housing. For many years since I've been on the council, I've been trying to get sufficient funding to have people, especially owner-occupied rehab, have people and help people remodel their home and reinvest in their home. One of the great things that about District 5 is that we have a larger percentage of home ownership than any other part in the city. 50%, 57% of people are homeowners. The problem is most of those houses were built before 1970, and the homeowners are more than 65 years old. So we have some challenges in there, but my priority for the district since I've been in office now 6 years has been for rehabilitation of our existing homes and communities.
And Christy Villanueva, president of West San Antonio Chamber of Commerce, can you tell us what do you see happening and what role do you have in trying to work with this?
So we do understand that a lot of the neighbors are receiving phone calls, some in a harassing manner, and we're trying to get the message out that they need to be educated, not only the residents, but also their children, because many times it's the elderly that are living there, and then they have extended family also living in that same home. So they need to make more of an informed decision. So our staff is partnering with the Mexican American Unity Council, with UTSA, with the Esperanza Center, and trying to get that message out there. We need for them to come out of their homes, attend the different classes that are going on in the neighborhoods, not just with us. We're hosting free classes in the neighborhoods, but there's other entities that are doing the same. And we need to get to the bottom of this to make sure they're not just giving their home away. Because unfortunately, some of these developers are only offering pricing of what that home was worth 20 years ago, not what it's worth today. And we want to make sure that everyone is fair.
So these phone calls, tell me more about that.
So I understand these phone calls because I happen to live on the east side, and I get phone calls all the time on a personal level. And it is just, it's developers, it's robocalls, it's all this range of phone calls. They're saying, sell now, we're going to offer the highest price for your home. And I've, out of curiosity, I've just called. I'm not going to sell my home. But I've called and they're just there to harass you.
Like, what's the harassment aspect of it?
So they're just trying to push. You need to sell your home. Let someone come by. We'll give you an evaluation. We're going to give you top dollar on your home. You know, and that's really not the case.
And but we also have like signs, these everywhere, these homemade signs. We'll buy your house as is. Also, a lot of mail coming in that looks like it's been handwritten, but it's actually computer printed out.
Yes.
But every day in the mailbox, somebody. But why is that harassment?
So that's deception in another form. So you can find with the Better Business Bureau that a lot of these folks just don't have a good rating, and they will take the money of these people and just push and push and push. So it's an inundation of all these ads and these people coming by and kind of doing a sweep in your neighborhood and saying, you don't need to be here. Let's lighten the load. We're going to help take care of you. And they're not there to take care of you.
And then, so people sell their homes for, you know, almost like half what it's worth.
Exactly.
Because they say, well, it's kind of run down. I mean, you know, my house could use a coat of paint itself, and I probably wouldn't get top dollar for it either. But you don't want to sell it for nothing. And then when you go look for another place to live, you don't have a lot to work with.
That's right. And these people have not been outside of their neighborhood in many, many years. They understand their neighborhood. They've lived there forever. So when they get outside, let's say one of these elderly folks, unfortunately, they find that rent somewhere, even nearby, is $1,100. They're devastated. They haven't been paying rent, you know, because they've purchased their home. So now they become homeless. They have to rely on another family member. So it's putting a burden on a lot of people. And we want to make sure that they just hang tight, don't sell, get the education first, and make an informed decision.
And Daniel Ibarra with the Mexican American Unity Council Housing Center, what are you seeing?
Exact same thing like Christy. We've seen that fear when it comes to the community members of just that predatory actions. And just like them, we're here to serve that education piece to community. And it's about addressing all levels of the family because we can see that a lot of times we have these events, these workshops, and we see the elderly community come out. But what about their kids? What about their grandchildren? We just can't stop with the seniors. We have to address the entire family. And that's what the purpose of MOC is here for. When we opened up this housing center about a year ago, we wanted it to serve as kind of like a one-stop shop for any housing needs, not just in the West Side, but in San Antonio as a whole. And we wanted it to serve to keep that peace of mind for community members to come to us and know that we're going to allow them we're going to hold their hand along their way. And if we can't provide the services ourselves, we can reference it out to somebody else because we have that trust with the community, and that's what we're trying to build.
And this housing stock that we have in these neighborhoods, like you say, it's so many family-owned homes, it becomes real important as the price of rent continues to go up, the lack of affordable housing. We have more intergenerational people moving into the houses because they have no place else to go. If they sell their home for pennies on the dollar, not only are they losing out on being able to make more money, but also what's that going to do for the children or grandchildren who may also need a place to live? And we see that all the time. So it's going to take getting a community informed, a community working together. It's going to take public policy being crafted that can address those direct needs, and then making everyone aware of what's going on so that they can take advantage of that. So we're going to talk about that this afternoon. And you can call in with your questions and comments. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. The Source continues right after this. Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about predatory gentrification. The west side of San Antonio, west of downtown, is bracing for a new wave of gentrification with announced plans for expansion of downtown UTSA. But even without that, we're seeing it all over the city, particularly on the east side. But anywhere in the inner core of the city, we're seeing a lot of homes that are being offered up. Come buy as is. And what does that mean for those families that sell? Are they getting the appropriate price for these homes? And what does that mean down the line for the city of San Antonio as we try to find affordable housing? This could actually push more people into the demand for affordable housing if we don't do this right. The number to call in is 210-614-8980. I have a voicemail from Mike.
This is Mike. I've been in the near downtown neighborhood since 1994. The way things are going, they're driving me out because of escalating tax prices, people selling out to ridiculous prices. It's urban cleansing, what I call it. They're just driving everybody out that's there to somebody who wants to pay ridiculous prices. And I think the city needs to step in and, for one, not appraise the value so much just because some other guy wants to pay exorbitant prices like they did in Austin. We're in jeopardy of ruining San Antonio.
All right, and that is from Mike, one of our listeners. And so Shirley Gonzalez, District 5 representative, can you talk about Mike's concerns?
About the, well, I'm not sure exactly where Mike lives. He mentioned the near downtown. But one of the things I think it's important to acknowledge is that this idea of predatory vendor or people coming to offer homes is not new. This has been going on for a very, very long time. There has been speculation that the West Side would be gentrified for decades. And so while I think it's a very interesting conversation, the reality is the West Side continues to lose population. We continue to lose students. Greatest risk that we have in our community today is that people cannot live in their home because there are not stable structures. So the city needs to do its part to help existing homeowners stabilize their homes. We need to stabilize our existing housing. One of the issues that has come up very often is that the San Antonio Housing Authority has been investing in properties outside the area, but hasn't redeveloped its existing properties. And we know that for people to live comfortably in the home, there are some modern amenities that are required, like air conditioning and Wi-Fi. And they need to step in and improve the quality of housing at Alasan, Apache, at Casiano, and at Lincoln Courts. So we are doing the best that we can. We set up, in fact, my office set up as a pilot the mock housing center so people would have a one-stop place to go. It was a recommendation in the Mayor's Policy Housing Task Force that we hope we can implement citywide. We know that affordable housing is going to be really critical as our community grows, and we know that the most affordable housing is the existing housing. But the way it stands right now, there's many people in our community that can no longer live in their home because they're in such a state of disrepair. And that's really going to require the private sector, the banks, be willing to make adjustments for people that are on fixed incomes, that the city come in and provide gap financing for some of those houses. I know personally, as a council member, we have in my office addressed at least 300 homes that were in need of either minor repair, major repair, or title clearance. Painting, roofing, all aspects of the home, because what we really are desperate for is to not lose population because the houses are in such poor quality.
And so Danielle Ibarra, coordinator for the Mexican American Unity Council Housing Center, you're playing a role in that.
Yes, we are. So like the councilwoman said, we started this housing center about a year ago. And one of the underlying issues that we're looking towards was the home repair side. One of the things that we noticed was that a lot of these residents actually didn't have proper title of their home. And in partnership with UTSA, Texas Rio Grande Legal Aid, as well as other pro bono attorneys, we started our estate planning service. And within a year, we've actually helped with a little bit of over $50,000 in legal fees to assure that the household asset is preserved. And so within that year, we've preserved a little bit of over $6 million in household assets, which a lot of times becomes that issue of, like, we want to apply to the city home repair programs. The issue is that the city requires for that person to have proper title of their home. And we've had situations where my grandfather owned a home back 40 years ago, but he passed away in 1990. And we have the grandchild here present in our office asking us to help them out to get proper title of their home.
Right. And the issue of property tax came up with the caller. And is there a way to provide more information about property tax relief or helping older residents. I know property taxes can be freeze at certain points. Shirley Gonzalez, do people know about these programs?
The city does not set appraised values, and that's very important for people to understand. We don't have, it's an independent board, and we don't have influence over that. But there are workshops. I know the Bexar County has workshops. We've hosted a couple of workshops as well, and I think the West Chamber is doing that. So informing people how to fight their taxes, how to reduce their property taxes. The 15th was the deadline, but it's something that we can continue to do year-round, because what has happened is a very sharp increase in appraised values that we had not seen before. And one of the problems that we've had in our community is that for decades, our appraised values, I believe, were artificially kept low. That was so that banks could not invest, people could not, it was not a good investment to invest in your home because the appraised values were so low. And then suddenly we had this very sharp increase in property values that we had never seen before. And so somewhere there should have been a slight increase every year in the decades past, so that people would know that investing in their homes was a good value. So we're hopeful that with the work that we're doing.
So you're saying it's a market correction that's been going on, sudden jolt.
A very steep market correction that is unfortunately putting people in compromising positions. That's why we need to make sure that people are applying for the tax freezes, that they know all the options that they have available, including not to feel pressured by predatory lending, which has always happened, but seems to be much more targeted and forceful.
All right, I'm going to go to a caller, 210-614-8980. Brian has called in. Brian, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Yes, I was calling about some of the threats that come in the mail about people that might be late on their bills, or even if they don't have any thing like that, they'll often threat that, you know, your house is up for grabs, you're going to lose it because of this late payment or these other issues. Is there any legality towards making those false claims? And whenever they're also posting all these flipper bandit signs, is there any legality to the excess of that?
Brian, thank you. All right, Christy Villanueva, president of West San Antonio Chamber of Commerce, what about these people who are threatening, who are almost like, they're scaring the bejesus out of people?
They are. A lot of these elderly folks are scared, and they don't want to lose their homes. They have nowhere to go. But they would have to get an attorney and then go after these groups. The thing is the marketing materials are very vague. The phone messages are very vague. You're trying to call that number back to find out what you can do. So it would be difficult to track. It takes money. These folks don't have money, which is why we rely on the nonprofit legal entities to help support that. But it is our responsibility as residents, and again, as leaders in the community, to do what we can to partner together. But unfortunately, there's nothing. It's just like if you get called, we get calls from bill collectors, and it's not your bill. It doesn't exist. But what would we have to do as individuals to get that to stop? We block the numbers. We go through a series of things. But essentially, it doesn't go anywhere.
Now, these people sometimes also threaten that they're going to call code compliance on you, that your house is not up to code, and so they can get an order to vacate slapped on your house, and you're going to lose it. So pay me now, or the city will knock down your home and bill you for the demolition. Does that happen?
So I haven't seen any neighbors actually happen, but that's very realistic. So if I was a developer, I can go look at different houses down a particular block and say, well, their grass is overgrown, the house has fallen down. I can go look at the electrical box to see if
it's... You go through the alley and you can see the back end of the house is kind of like slumped over.
Yes. So I was in construction before this, so I know exactly. I can walk through the neighborhood and see who has electricity and who doesn't. And that's a problem because that's a real threat. So that developer could just make a phone call to the city. Now, those threats are very real, and we're trying to stop that, working with CPS Energy to give them, those elderly folks, a waiver so that they can give them more time, keep the light on, keep the AC on. But it's all of us working together and others to support that.
So Shirley Gonzalez, District 5 representative at City Council, can you talk about what you're how you're working with code compliance so that they don't become a tool of these predatory gentrifiers.
So I have not heard of that extreme example that you just gave. We know that code compliance is, they have been viewed in that way, that they're being, people are getting fined excessively. But when we talk to our constituents, what our first step is that how can we help you? So many times there are people that are, for whatever reason, not capable of maintaining that house. And there are options available for those people as well. Because often if they can't maintain their home, they have other issues as well, like food insecurity and perhaps other safety concerns. Perhaps they can't, they don't have transportation, so it's difficult for them to provide access to resources. So we will spend, we as in my council office will go directly to their home to see how we can help them. And the other issue is we do have renters who are often not keeping up, and with out of town landlords who also then are not responding to the code compliance, and that comes up very often as well.
So there is this thing called the Community Tool Shed, which is operated by the City of San Antonio, where people who need to do some major yard work, they can, like, it's like a lending library for tools. And people can do, and it seems it's more geared towards helping people cut down trees and branches and stuff. Can something like that be expanded and maybe incorporated into the local library so we could check out power tools and compressors and things in order to help work on people's homes without having to spend thousands of dollars on those high expensive tools?
Usually if the person also doesn't have tools, they don't have the physical ability to maintain the property. So that could be one solution for somebody that was able-bodied, that didn't want to borrow the tools. But the reality is, when we see extreme situations, just having the tools is not going to help them. They really need somebody to come in and do the physical work. And that's where we look for volunteer opportunities. We know that our code compliance officers have often, and I have witnessed it personally, helped people that had issues with hoarding, helped people that had issues with trees, branches, and that sort of thing. So we could set aside a pocket of funding, not just to deal with the particular issues that that person has, their physical disabilities that may prevent them from doing that, but having a pot of money to allow for staff to come in and help them.
And Daniel Ibarra with the Mexican American Unity Council Housing Center, do y'all have organizations, get-togethers with people to try and help them save their homes?
Yes, of course. So about 2 weeks ago with Shirley's office, as well as Mi Ciudad, Mi Comunidad, we held an event to teach people how to protest their taxes. And Rich Acosta, the CEO for Mi Ciudad Es Mi Comunidad, actually hands-on protests that with the residents. All ourselves with MOC, one of the big things that we've focused on was to get certified in foreclosure prevention. So myself and the housing center manager are certified in foreclosure prevention. So at any moment that a resident fears that they might lose their house, or they get calls that you need to sign over your home because you're late on this payment, come to MOC, come to our housing center, sit with us, and we can try to guide you along the way.
And how do people respond when you show them these things, and you're able to present this information in a bilingual fashion and help them deal with that, and are they able to access that?
Yeah, so a big thing is a lot of people just don't know the resources that are out there for them, especially our Spanish community. And as somebody who was born here in the West Side, who's lived here for 23 years now, I know that fear is instilled in our community of not knowing what's available to us. But once the client actually comes to us, they have that peace of mind of knowing, oh, it's okay, I'm with the right hands.
All right. We're talking about gentrification in San Antonio, preparing some of our neighborhoods to deal with this issue. It's accelerating. We're trying to give them the information that they need in order to stay in their homes. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. The source continues right after this quick break.
Immigration.
I think we need to all get in before the wall goes up.
Health.
The Promotora, they have all the resources that can get them the help that they need.
Art.
There's this kind of subversiveness to it, right?
We cover all these topics and more on Fronteras as we examine issues along the border and beyond. I'm Norma Martinez. Download Fronteras where you find your favorite podcasts.
This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about gentrification in San Antonio. If you think it's bad now, just wait because it's starting to accelerate. What can we do to protect vulnerable families, keep them from being displaced? The number is 210-614-8980. Let's go to the phone. So this is Judeep. And Judeep, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Yes. My family, I don't live on the west side. I live on the east side, and my family's lived on the east side since the 40s. And what I wanted to mention is that I've lived in other cities where I've lived in neighborhoods that have experienced gentrification. But something that's not really being mentioned here in San Antonio that I experienced myself is the increased policing that happens in neighborhoods when they're getting gentrified. My 16-year-old son has been racially profiled as a result of my neighborhood getting gentrified. My neighborhood has always been racially mixed, and so we've never experienced that until probably the last year and a half. You know, he was walking home from the park, and he had a police helicopter light shown right on him on my front porch. And as the mother of a Black child, this is something that's just really terrifying to me, and it's something that is not being mentioned enough.
Judeep, thank you for the call. Daniel Ibarra, coordinator for the Mexican American Unity Council Housing Center. Is there a racial component to gentrification? We had a call earlier from Mike, and he talked about he thought there was kind of an ethnic cleansing happening in these neighborhoods.
Yeah, so like many people know, the west side of San Antonio for years has had a large Latino population. And with gentrification comes, unfortunately, residents that have been there for years getting profiled as a threat to the community when in reality they are the community. That unfortunately comes with an issue once it comes with gentrification and just seeing these populations invade our community. And unfortunately, I guess police enforcement misguidedly follow that population's.
Well, I mean, to me, this is, tell me if I'm wrong, but this is how you have a new family that moves into a neighborhood, and there's things are happening in the neighborhood that has been going on for generations. And now, but these people, they're new, they're not culturally adapted to what's really normal in the neighborhood, and now they're calling police on people who are just living life. And it seems, and they sort of accelerates this feeling of change that's not welcome. I mean, Councilmember Shirley Gonzalez, how can we, you know, ease that transition?
So I wouldn't say that we're seeing that yet. We're a community that's 97% Latino. We haven't seen that demographic shift. We have not seen the financial shift either. So we are, in fact, just yesterday I was interviewed about the high number of murders in District 5, apparently disproportionately higher than the rest of the city, which I thought was unfair, characteristic that we're still a very dangerous place to be. So we have not experienced that in our neighborhoods. We still continue to be largely Latino, largely Spanish-speaking community in our neighborhood.
And I want to get your reaction to that, Christy Villanueva, with president of the West San Antonio Chamber of Commerce.
So I am a mother of two. I have a teenager at home that's 14. You know, I don't let him go out late. I know that I see helicopters at night going through my neighborhood all the time. There is a general concern. I wouldn't say that targeting and profiling is, you know, happening on this rampant basis, but I work with the Sheriff's Department, Bexar County Sheriff's Department, and with the police department to host a gold badge class and an active shooter class. And we do talk about that, that gangs do exist in our neighborhoods. There was a recent drug bust only two blocks from my home about 6 months ago. There I subscribe, a lot of us subscribe to Nextdoor, and we're constantly seeing those posts. So there are things going on quite frequently, but this involves a lot of things. It's kids, it's gangs, it's homelessness. These are things that have existed forever that we all have to activate.
Yeah, but there's, for decades, guys have stood on the corners and drank beer and told stories. True. And listened to loud music in this one particular neighborhood, and they have nothing to do. Actually, I consider the neighborhood watch, because they're keeping an eye on my house and they know me and everything's cool and it's not a threat, but the character of the neighborhood changes and now they're calling McManus on these guys.
Absolutely. And I have seen that just in my 4-block radius where that happens. There are people that they walk around with a 40 and just kind of patrol with their little dogs and... Yeah, and I've had neighbors say, well, I'm calling the police because it looks suspicious. And it's unfortunate because you have to educate them and say, hold on, they're not doing anything. That's all they're doing is just walking around.
Yeah, so that's Puerto San Antonio.
Yes.
All right, let's go to another caller. This is John. And John, hi, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you. We have 4 rent houses and our personal home between the airport downtown in Fort Sam. The 4 rent houses, they go up on our rates all the time. The taxes go up, the valuations go up, and if it's not the house, it's going to be $20,000-$30,000 on the land. So not everybody in the world or every citizen's greedy, and we don't want to go up on the rent on the people that are living in our rental houses. They've been there for 9 years and longer. But when they shove the rates so high, we don't have any choice. So gentrification does happen, because when we have to go up on the rent and those people might have to move, the new clientele, have more money. There's just no way around it. And thank God that we're old so that our school taxes are frozen. Or we'd be having to leave our house. So that's what I have to say about it.
Well, John, thanks for calling in and giving us an update on your side of things. Shirley Gonzalez, council member from District 5, we're dealing with market forces. And the market forces are driving up these property values, and it's being reflected in the property taxes. That's part of the whole market as well. And San Antonio's got this high growth cycle happening right now. John's caught in that, and what can you tell him?
So John mentioned, in the sort of the area in the north part of town. And so since we're focusing today's conversation on the west side, we mentioned earlier in the show about the very high increase of appraised values, which the city does not control. But I think it's still important to recognize that the west side is not participating in the growth of the rest of the city. There has been this discussion about the risk of gentrification in the neighborhoods. But the reality is we continue to lose population, our schools are continuing to close, our churches are consolidating, our businesses are closing, and we are not participating in the growth that the rest of the city is seeing. So I have done many things to try to help our existing property owners stay in their homes, like the Mock Center. We've invested more money for housing, to stabilize housing. I've been working with Saha to try to get them to upgrade their facilities so that people can stay in the neighborhoods and not get displaced when they eventually do. They're going to have to eventually redo those houses, asking for as many public housing units as existed before. But we must have growth in our community. And in the 6 years that I've been on the council, we've had exactly 2 projects started and completed. And that's not enough housing units for people that want to live in the neighborhood. So we have 1 coming online, Rio Lofts, a little bit to the south, 78 units of completely affordable housing. But currently, if you wanted to come in and live in my neighborhood, you would have very few options.
Okay, another caller. This is Cynthia. Hi, Cynthia. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Well, hello. Thank you for taking my call. I was just finding out about, this is the first time I'd heard about the Mock Center, Mexican American Community. I imagine is what that is. I have a house, older home my parents left, and I'm just trying to find out what resources are available. I heard some advertisement one time on TV about rebuilding an organization that helps rebuild your house or restore your house. So I'm trying to find out where I can access that.
Okay, so Daniel Ibarra is with us. He's a coordinator of the Mexican American Unity Council Housing Center.
Hi. Yeah. So I just wanted to, reassurance on the property. I know you said that your parents left that house. One of the things is that if it's owner occupied right now, if you want any of the city programs for rehab, it must be owner occupied. And like I mentioned earlier in the show, you must have proper title to that home. So if your parents did leave a will entitling you to the home, that makes the process a lot quicker. You can come to the Mock Housing Center and we can help you out with the applications to apply to the city programs to get those home repair programs. In the situation that you don't have proper title and your parents did not leave a will, same thing goes, come to the Mock Housing Center. We have legal partners that can help you out and get proper title to that home.
Okay, if I'm not Mexican-American, can I go to the Mock Center?
Of course, we're open to all of San Antonio.
Okay, just to be clear. And that is, and I can go there and you can help me figure out what programs I would qualify for and what I need to do to qualify.
Exactly.
All right, another caller. This is Sophia. Sonia. Sonia, hi. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi. I was just calling. Sheriff Zapala said that the pricing or getting priced out isn't happening. It is currently happening on the south side in the Novalitos area. The housing market is out of control. Families that have lived there for generations are not able to purchase additional homes because it's $200,000 for a two-bedroom, one bath. The restaurants and bars that are coming into the area the prices are out of control. People are feeling drowned. They're not welcome anymore in their community. The city is absolutely doing nothing. Saha's trying to consolidate as well. The housing units that they're going to create, they're mixed income. Only 20% of the apartments that they're going to be building are going to be affordable for people in the communities that they're building in.
Sonia, thank you for the call. You're bringing up some great points. We're going to talk about them when we come back from the break. We've got some phone lines open. If you want to join the conversation, 210-614-8980. We'll talk about Sonia's phone call and the price of housing. Where is it headed in San Antonio? It's going up. 210-614-8980. The Source continues right after this. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. The median price of a new home in Bexar and surrounding counties reached $230,700 last month for the month of April, and that's a 4% increase from the year before. Housing prices continue to climb in Bexar County, and it doesn't matter if it's brand new or if it's an older legacy home that you'll find in the inner city. Prices continue to climb, and that means some people are being displaced. We got to figure out what we can do to keep people in their homes, because where are they going to go? The number is 210-614-8980 if you got a question or comment. Real quickly, so we heard from Sonia when we went to the break, and I wanted to get reaction from Christy Villanueva, president of West San Antonio Chamber of Commerce.
So I can understand Sonia's point. I completely get, she may not have the income to support something like a $200,000 home. But at the end of the day, wherever we are, we need to make sure that we get our education, because it's our responsibility as residents of Bexar County and the city of San Antonio to make sure that we understand what our rights are as residents. So even if it's myself, I have to know what I'm capable of. I have to know what my range is. And of course, I want to make improvements on my life. But that means better education. That means more outreach. There are thousands and thousands of groups out there that offer help, and not one size fits all. And if you don't like the way the system works as far as maybe the housing task force or if there's another group, you can get involved. It's very easy. These are all public meetings that go on constantly. The information is on our website, it's on the city website, it's on the Mock website. They have the information and we can help to move you along your path, but it's our responsibility as residents to make sure that we can test our taxes with the county, to make sure that we understand what's happening in our neighborhood, and we have to take action, all of us together.
I got a comment from Frank on our Facebook page. If they didn't let their neighborhoods become blighted, it wouldn't be happening. And so Shirley Gonzalez, District 5 representative on City Council, how do you take on that?
It's a very common theme for people to blame an individual for their circumstances without having the full picture. We have had many, many generations of obvious oppression to our communities. You can see it in the infrastructure and also in the way that people have been treated for generations. But the reality is we as the government can have a serious impact on the improvement of our neighborhoods. That's why I believe that the equity budget was so important, which redirected funds to areas that needed it most, especially regarding our streets and our infrastructure, our sidewalks. We're finally starting to see a little bit of that investment in our neighborhoods on the near west side and the near south side. It has nothing to do with the appraised values, which were increasing before the equity budget. But we're finally starting to see some of the infrastructure that we have deserved all this time. So for Frank to say that we allowed this to happen is just a gross misunderstanding of how the government has worked for many decades.
Or the economy, how people of color were underpaid in San Antonio and were allowed to do, it was something that went on for generations and generations. Only recently we've started to see that being rectified, but where's his legacy?
And I think that, this is exactly right. We could have a whole nother discussion just about that. Because we've had so many decades of disinvestment in our communities, we're starting to see a little bit of resurgence in that, in people, mostly people wanting to stay in their neighborhood. So what I hope to accomplish in my terms here on the council is not so much that to prevent the gentrification, but that people who have lived here all this time, once they have the opportunity, once they do get educated and they get better jobs, that they choose to stay in our neighborhood. Because what has happened and what we have told our children for generations is that you haven't made it in this life until you've left the West Side. And so our neighborhoods need to be a desirable place to live. And that has been the focus of my attention for the last 6 years.
Okay, I'm going to go back to the phones, and we have Graciela Sanchez joining us from the Esperanza Peace and Justice Center. They have been at the forefront of trying to keep people in their homes as this gentrification issue continues to develop. Graciela, welcome to The Source.
Hi, Dave. Thanks for having this conversation. The Esperanza has been working in the West Side community, and we are part of the Mi Barrio No Se Vende Coalition. We started as part of, with the work with the West Side Preservation Alliance, as we saw over and over and over and continue to see people's homes just getting targeted by code compliance officers who act more like police and not like the social service compassionate people that they should be. They have the power of the police, and that's the way they treat people in that neighborhood. And we, years ago, gave the city's offices, development services, planning, zoning, city mayor, everybody, even Shirley Gonzalez, graphs where we show how District 2, 5, and 1 are being targeted. And the closer you live to downtown, the more. The new sort of housing that we're talking about, that Alazan lost, and the when they raised the Alazan court, which is what Zaha is planning to do, they're going to displace 1,200 individuals, 500 families, 1,200 individuals, and nowhere are they going to give back the same homes to the same people that are living there. We've been saying these are historic courts, housing projects built in the 1940s and supported by Eleanor Roosevelt and Franklin Roosevelt. They can be saved and made five-story homes and keep the people there. The Alazan loss that they're planning will only bring in eight or nine families that are in public housing when they tear those down. So there's no interest in people keeping the folks that have lived there all their lives in place. The consequence also will be the social network for all these families will be totally devastated. Schools will close down because all of a sudden all those children will not be in there. And the homeowners that come in will not want to send their kids to what they consider low-performing schools. So we're really damaging the community in such a profound way.
So real quickly, so I get a lot of the callers here. Graciela Sanchez with Esperanza Center. How these are market forces that are reshaping San Antonio. What is what are some ways of dealing with that to keep people in their homes and keep neighborhoods intact?
Well, we've been trying to ask the city staff to work with community folks to develop policies that allow for that. I think now they're talking about neighborhood empowerment zones, but we haven't been talked to directly about them. We've talked to the city officials to, again, work with us around code compliance, because if you don't have compassion for the people you're working in, if you believe that that neighborhood and the citizens, okay, residents in that neighborhood are bad, you're going to target them. So how do we offer workshops to those code compliance officers? And we've been offering ourselves to do this work for free, and we don't get the response back from the city.
All right. Graciela Sanchez, we're out of time. Thank you so much for calling in. I'm going to give District 5 Council Representative Shirley Gonzalez an opportunity to respond about everything that the city is doing to keep these neighborhoods intact.
Well, thank you. And so it has been a very exciting process. For the last 6 years, I have been addressing this issue, and that's working with MOC, community partners, also LISC and LIFT Fund, to number one, help certify contractors. One of the issues that came up very often was that people got ripped off by an unscrupulous contractor. So certifying contractors that could do small home repair. We also did the title clearance, which cleared titles for over 140 people in the neighborhood, so then they could do whatever they chose with their home, remodel or invest or whatever they wanted to do. We also had homeowners fairs to help people protest, to help people with the things that were mentioned earlier. But also we set up the MOC Housing Center, so you would have a one-stop place to go in the event that you needed help with housing.
Sure, and some of the things that Graciela brought up about Saha and stuff, those are complicated, deep issue conversations that we will be having, and we'll be talking about what's happening to the courts. But we're probably talking about neighborhoods, and these are neighborhoods that need to be armed with information, because basically that's where they're at a disadvantage. They have these predatory gentrifiers coming in. They know the market, they have the funding, and they're able to try and take advantage of people. So Danielle Ibarra with the Mexican-American Unity Council Housing Center, how are you responding, giving the neighborhoods information that they need?
So for us, the big thing, like I mentioned throughout the show, it's that education. That's the missing piece when it comes to our community. It's not that they don't want to try to succeed or get further ahead in life. It's just they're missing that piece of education of what do they need to do next to assure that they stay in their home, to make sure that the value of their home goes up, and make sure they're happy with where they are.
So, okay, say I do want to move out, mm-hmm, and someone does want to buy my house. Is there somebody I can call and talk to that I know would be honest with me, who could tell me, like, man, you're giving that house away. You need to be asking for X amount and here are your rights. And who can I turn to?
It comes back to that one-stop shop with the MOC Housing Center. Our two counselors are certified in post-purchase counseling, and that entails of one day possibly selling your home. So if you're thinking of selling your home, or somebody's trying to buy your home and you think it might be underpriced or undervalued, come to us and we can try to give you that peace of mind of that you're actually selling that home at the right price.
In 30 seconds, Christy Villanueva, the president of West San Antonio Chamber of Commerce. Any last words?
So I hear Graciela's cry for help and understanding. And we need to preserve the history of the West Side. We need to preserve the history of the East Side and do for our neighbors.
It's living history. We got to keep
Absolutely.
It living.
Absolutely. So myself, I need to be looking out for my neighbor, my elderly neighbor, my friend. We need to get out there onto the streets. We need to block walk. We need to work together as one unit.
And we need to look at places that have historic significance and make sure they're not mowed down and knocked down during this process. Absolutely. As well. I want to thank all of our guests, Shirley Gonzalez, District 5 Representative, Christine Villanueva with the West San Antonio Chamber of Commerce, Danny Ibarra with the Mexican American Unity Council. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted by David Martin Davies, produced by Kim Johnson and Dallas Williams. Direction provided by News Director Dan Katz. Technical assistance provided by Ruben Garcia. Support for The Source comes from the contributors to the Community Engagement Fund, including the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.